I'm Ryan.
And I'm Andy.
And this is Shivers. Andy.
Hi.
I can't believe it's been like a month since I've sat here with you.
Legit a month. Yeah.
Oh, no. How have you been?
I'm good.
Good.
Yeah.
Doing better.
Much better. Oh my gosh.
I'm sure everybody else missed you too.
Oh, well, thanks, guys. Yeah, that first week after the procedure was awful.
Yeah.
It was terrible. And I worked from home all last week to help while healing, which definitely helped. And so my first week back in the office was this week, and I'm doing much better. I had my two-week follow-up yesterday, and the doctor gave me the all clear.
Yeah. And do you want the listeners to know that you had your good twin removed?
Yeah.
And so now you're all evil twin all the time?
All the time. 24/7 evil twin. Yep. That was my procedure. So
great. Congratulations.
Highly recommend it for everyone.
So let's talk about the game on Patreon.
Yes.
So we're doing a little movie game, and we need help with ideas.
Yeah, so give us some ideas, please.
To participate by giving us ideas, thank you very much. All you have to do is go to patreon.com/shivers, and there's a post on there that's a link to a Google Doc, and then you can go in there and just plug in whatever ideas you have.
Yeah.
And it'll go into the bank, and then we will use it. In a future game.
Episode. Yeah.
Yeah.
You do not have to be a subscribing member to Patreon in order to play. You just have to scroll down to that post and click on it.
And if there's a way to pin it, I'll pin it so it'll be toward the top. But yeah, it is public. You don't have to be a Patreon supporter. But we would like if you were.
Yeah, we'd love that.
So since it's been like a month since we've been here, I feel like I had stuff I wanted to talk to you about.
Like scary stuff?
Yeah.
Go figure.
Just like in general. I'd be like, oh my gosh, work gets been so boring.
We gotta just catch up.
So, I feel like shortly after we finished the last episode, you recommended for me to watch Dragula.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it's amazing.
Dragula with a G, not Dracula.
Right, the Boulay Brothers.
Yes.
Dragula, which has been airing on Out TV, and the second and third seasons are on Netflix right now.
Yes.
So I would say that it's like the horror enthusiast's version of RuPaul's Drag Race.
Absolutely.
I feel like there's a little bit less, like, technical drag stuff.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot less talk about how meaty someone's tuck is.
None of that.
But the costumes are amazing.
Oh my gosh, they're incredible.
So yeah, definitely if that's kind of your scene and you're interested, check it out.
Yeah, I mean, the queens are so talented.
Yeah.
And just the things, the costumes that they come up with, like the ideas that they come up with. I mean, I feel like people who listen to the show, if you're into like the drag community or drag in general, you're going to love
Or Dragula. Even if you like feel like you're part of or interested in like queer community, because it's a good way to be like exposed to like real queer people.
Yes.
Not like written by a straight cis person queer
people. Right. Like a social activist straight cis person. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like myself.
They're like real queer people. So yeah, definitely it was good.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. Well, good. I'm glad that you liked it.
I also have seen several movies since we last sat.
Oh yeah.
So I saw I'm gonna try to go in backwards order of when I went.
Okay.
To try to remember them all. So I saw The Invisible Man.
Yeah, that looked good.
It was good.
Yeah.
It's really not scary. It's more of like a thriller, but it was very well done. The acting was very good.
Yeah.
Two thumbs up. I would say
way up.
4 stars.
Awesome.
It was good. Yeah.
Good.
I saw The Lodge.
In the theater? That's set out in the theater?
Yeah. But it may not be any longer. It was like a film festival circuit movie last year, and then it got a theatrical release this year. It was very good, but a total downer.
Oh.
So you have to be like in the right mood to watch it because it's a bummer of a movie. But it's good.
Like a tragedy?
It does have some kind of tragic elements to it.
Man. I don't know that I would want to watch such a downer movie.
But it's definitely a bummer, but it's very well done.
Okay.
So if you're in the mindset to deal with a bummer, check it out.
Yeah.
All right. So then we go back all the way to Gretel and Hansel. Was there nothing else?
I don't know.
Oh, I saw the new, I saw Brahms, The Boy 2.
What's that?
Okay, so The Boy was a movie that came out maybe in 2017 or 2018 about this woman that gets hired as a nanny, and she finds out that she's basically nannying a doll.
Oh.
And then it seems like the house is haunted, and the doll moves, and, you know, it's very good. It's very good. Mm. I would say, like, 3 stars.
Okay.
And it, the last time I checked, it was still on Netflix. Brahms, The Boy 2. If you like The Boy, you may not like The Boy 2.
What?
They totally did a 180 on the concept. Oh. Like, what made the first one good, they were like, cool, but, like, what if we didn't do that? Like, they don't go back in time and, like, do, like, an alternate timeline thing.
Yeah.
But they, like, twist the story so it, like, comes back on itself and becomes something else. And I was like, why do they do it that way?
Ew, that sounds awful. They were like, what can we do now to make a movie that sucks?
I think they probably were like, well, this concept isn't really built for a sequel and we really want some more money. So how can we get the money?
Yeah. Oh, that's disappointing.
Yeah. What else? Oh, the movie I See You with Helen Hunt. Also, I saw that. It's out on DVD.
Mm.
That was good, too. Like, 3.5 stars.
Yeah. I haven't seen or heard of that one.
It's not a horror. It's more of a thriller.
Yeah. I like thrillers. Yeah. Though. I do.
Not a bummer.
That's good.
but it was definitely good. Like, it, like, kept you kind of, like, guessing and trying to figure it out. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. I don't think I've watched any movies, but I have watched a couple things on Netflix,
mm-hmm.
big Netflix series. Have you started Lock and Key?
Yeah.
It's so good. Like, so, also not a horror.
I almost kind of forgot that I did. I feel like I watched the first, like, maybe 2 or 3 episodes, and it was good.
Yeah, I thought so, too. I thought it was really creative,
mm-hmm.
and it just, every episode, I feel like, keeps you on the edge of your seat. Wondering what's going to happen next.
Right, because,
like,
anything can happen.
Who Echo is and all of that. I finished it, so I know, and I'm not going to ruin anything for anyone.
Good.
But.
And thank you for not ruining season 2 of Dracula for me.
Yes, I will not. I won't.
yeah, so definitely recommend.
Oh,
Lock
yeah.
and Key.
And then if you're an anime fan who also happens to love Dracula, like I do,
mm-hmm.
as well as old school video games, this third season of Castlevania is out now.
Oh.
And I just started it this past week. I'm on episode, I think, like 8 already. Okay. And I love that series. It's so good. So it follows, like, the video game
mm-hmm.
from, like, the early 80s or 90s?
90s, I think.
Yeah, 90s. The regular Nintendo mm-hmm. NES. And it's Alucard and a couple people, the vampire hunter and a speaker magician, and their, like, pursuit to slay Dracula.
Cool.
Because Dracula goes crazy after his wife is murdered by mm-hmm. humans, so he wants to kill all humans alive.
Oh, okay.
So they're trying to stop him, essentially.
There are a lot of humans.
Yeah, there are. But Dracula's all-powerful, right? Mm-hmm. So it's really good. So if you haven't seen it yet, I mm-hmm. highly recommend it. If cool. you're into that sort of thing, I happen to like anime.
Cool.
Yeah.
Shall we get into it?
We shall.
So we are talking this week about fey folk and changelings.
Yes.
You want to get us started?
I'll get you started.
Okay.
I'm going to apologize in advance because I feel like my research took a sharp left turn. So if there's anything about fey folk that you really wanted to learn or know, let us know, because I will have to circle back to it in a different episode.
And I feel like we definitely have enough content that we can do a whole other episode about this. So
yeah.
If you guys are like, hey, this was really cool, but I feel like I didn't learn as much as I was expecting, just let us know, and we'll revisit it sooner than later.
Yeah, it's fairy lore and legend and everything is so vast.
Like, yeah.
It's going to be hard to put just so many succinct things in one episode. So the way that I organized it is kind of trying to go back to focus on, like, Irish
okay.
and Celtic lore surrounding
good.
Fairies.
Good, because I have a story to tell that takes place, I think, either in England or Wales. That's on a different piece of notes.
Mm.
And Yeah, and then the scary story for today takes place, you know, here in America, where I know how things work.
Oh, yeah. Well, I just have some, it's really pretty general stuff for fairies. I'm going to talk a little bit about the origin story in Ireland of the Aeshi. So we've mentioned the Aeshi in previous episodes.
Like those people, which I cannot say.
Yeah, yes. So essentially, they're fairies and they live underground, but I'm going to tell the origin story of how and why that came to be and how that has impacted Irish cultural heritage and beliefs.
Let's do it.
And then before going into changelings, I'm assuming you'll want to tell your story because it's about fairies, but
yeah,
I have some interesting stuff on changelings that I think is going to be really fascinating.
Great. And then we'll get into media.
Yes. Okay. So the majority of fairy lore, no surprise, comes from Ireland, Scotland, and England. When we talk about England, it's specifically, or especially, I should say, the areas of Wales and Cornwall.
Okay.
Pixies are huge in Cornwall. There's really no single place of origin, like geographically around the world, for fairies themselves.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Is there a difference between a pixie and a fairy?
A pixie is a fairy.
Okay.
And so here's the thing. I think, and I'll get there.
Okay.
I'll get there in
Sorry.
A second. No, that's okay. I will answer it literally in 2 seconds. The belief in fairies goes back thousands of years. A lot of the fairy lore comes from mostly Europe. So many other countries, aside from like Britain, Scotland, Ireland, they have tales of fairies as well. So we're talking about like Germany and even Slavic countries like Poland. And not that France is a Slavic country, but France also has a little bit of fairy lore as well. So most of the lore derives from Europe itself.
Okay.
Now, fairy, as I have come to understand it, is really an umbrella term for any mythological being with some kind of magical powers or abilities that are metaphysical, supernatural, or preternatural.
Okay.
So, like, preternatural is, like, kind of in the middle between the mundane and the miraculous.
Isn't that, like, having, like, a sixth sense is a preternatural?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So when it comes to pixies, they are a kind of fairy.
Mm-hmm.
So really, I think fairies as we know them, when we think of pixies, we think that is the fairy.
So like a Tinkerbell.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So like in the U.S., we think of fairies as simply tiny winged creatures with human-like appearance, having magical powers and an appetite for trickery, but are mostly benevolent, like Tinkerbell. But really, there are so many other beings that fall into the category of fae that look and behave much differently.
Right.
So I think the origin of fae, like from Ireland especially, is not like how we think of this pixie is a fairy. That's like the be-all, end-all.
Mm-hmm.
For them, I mean, there's so much diversity in what a fairy is. Gnomes, dwarves, elves, sprites, pixies, goblins, nymphs, leprechauns.
Did you say trolls?
Not yet, but I will. Banshees, doulahans, selkies, sirens and mermaids, trolls and ogres. They're
so really
all fairies.
All magical beings.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
It's literally just the umbrella term for someone or something that has some kind of magical essence to it.
Cool.
I think our romanticization of, you know, fairies, it comes largely thanks to literature and art from like the romanticism of the Victorian era, like 1837 to 1901. So like, and even medieval art and literature, like from like Chaucer and Shakespeare and them. I mean, but fairies, they permeate our culture, too, in that we have a tooth fairy. We have a fairy godmother.
Mm-hmm.
If you think of absinthe, the drink, it's called the green fairy because it makes you hallucinate and you see the green fairy. So, I mean, they're all over. They're everywhere. Prior to the onset of Christianity, particularly in Celtic lands, fairies played a very large role in their cultural beliefs. So enter the Aeshi.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I wrote literally the entire origin story of Ireland. I don't know that I should get into all of that because it it takes a while to get to where the ASER, so I'm going to jump ahead. So essentially,
that sounds great.
Yeah. Look at these notes. Like, it's ridiculous. Okay.
Pages turning.
Seriously. I wrote for hours. Like, it's ridiculous. But so essentially, to water everything down very much, there are like six very ancient tribes of people who have settled the Irish lands.
Okay.
So I'm going to start with, let's see. I'm going to start with the fifth tribe. They were called the... Yes.
That makes perfect sense.
Because there's just so much that leads you up to that point.
Yeah, I know.
And the funny thing is, when you go through this stuff, too, like... So a lot of Irish culture was written down by monks, Christian monks, who were missionizing Ireland. So in Ireland's origin story... They have a lot of biblical references, which I was really surprised. Like, for example, and I won't get too much into it, but the very first settler of Ireland was a granddaughter of Noah, the biblical Noah.
Hmm.
Yeah. And that's how the chain started. So it's interesting because I never would have associated that. But essentially, the fifth group of people that were settling Ireland, they were called the Tuatha De Danann. So they were a group of people who...
I'm so glad you do the pronunciation.
You know what I do? I look up the pronunciations on YouTube by people who live in Ireland.
Ah, yeah. Smart.
Yes. So the Tuatha De Danann, and this is actually their second time. By the time that they're the fifth group of settlers, this is the second time they've been in Ireland. So they tried to settle there once before and ended up being driven out. And they went to the land north. And that's literally all... The stories say is just that they went north and they became something more than they were in their time up north.
Interesting. Yeah. Because the Ijirak, the Inuit...
Yeah. The shapeshifter.
The Inuit shapeshifter, they went too far north.
Right. See, and they're, like, there's magical things that happened up north, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. It's weird. Okay. So the Tuatha De Danann...
We live on a north shore.
Yeah.
Wee magic.
Wee magic. So they left Ireland to go north, and in the north, they came under the guidance of this goddess named Danu. So Tuatha De Danann literally means people of the goddess Danu. So Danu sent them to train in these four mythical cities of knowledge called Gorias, Phineas, Morias, and Phallias. And by the time they were done with their training, they had evolved into something more than... the previous tribe of people that had left Ireland. So with their newfound knowledge and godlike abilities that they obtained in these four mythical cities, they returned to Ireland to reclaim their home. They fought against this other tribe of people who had previously left Ireland, went to Greece, were put into slavery for like 250 years, and then migrated back to Ireland. They became the Fir Bolg. So...
Oh.
Yeah.
I know Fir Bolg.
Yeah. So they were inhabiting Ireland when the Tuatha De Danann came back.
Okay.
They won and ended up displacing the Fir Bolg, but the Tuatha De Danann's king, King Nuada, lost his arm in a battle, and now because he was essentially imperfect, he could no longer be king. So a half-Fomorian named Bres took the throne and turned out to be a tyrant, and then essentially... he enslaved the Tuatha De Danann people for 7 years. Now, Fomorians are a race of ancient Celtic or Irish beings that have just always been in Ireland, and they're from the land. So if you think of something that's similar to that, I would liken them to the Titans in Greek mythology. So they were like large, big, hideous beasts that just came. They were like born from the land, and they always lived there.
Okay.
That's the Fomorians. So Bres was a half-Fomorian who assumed the throne. And then, you know, after the 7 years passes with magic, the Tuatha De Danann's former king, Nuada, his arm was restored, and then he was able to take his throne back from Bres. Bres then sought assistance from Balor, who was king of the Fomorians. So another battle took place. Balor ended up killing Nuada in that battle, but Lu, a champion of the Tuatha De Danann, killed Balor and then assumed the title of king. Okay, so now we have a Tuatha De Danann king they have successfully taken their land back.
Okay.
The Milesians, enter the Milesians. They were a group of people who had ties ancestrally to the people who built the Tower of Babel.
Oh.
The people who built the Gaelic, or invented the Gaelic language and escaped escaped slavery in Egypt alongside the Israelites. So see, these are where a lot of the biblical references come in. So the Milesians wandered the world for 440 years after escaping Egypt before eventually landing in Spain and conquering Spain. They were explorers after that, so they ended up exploring and sending an envoy to what was Ireland, and they started exploring Ireland. They were received well by the Tuatha De Danann and King Lugh at the time, but before they could return as a people to their own land in Spain, one of their princes on that trip was mysteriously murdered, and this sparked a war between the Milesians and the Tuatha De Danann. Somehow, the godlike Tuatha De Danann were no match for the Milesians and were quickly forced into a truce. When it came time to divide the land between the Milesians and the Tuatha De Danann, the Milesians cleverly allotted the portion above ground to themselves, leaving the portion underground to the Tuatha De Danann. So this is how the Tuatha De Danann became the Aeschi. So they became the people of the mounds. So they were this once really powerful, godlike tribe of Irish settlers, and they became essentially the race of fairy people that is super important to the Irish and their Irish culture and heritage, and that's essentially who they worship.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and they spend some of their time, of course, underground in these fairy mounds or in fairy rings. They also can interact, of course, with the human world, so they can come out into the human world. And if you've ever dug into any Irish mythology too, like the other world is very, there's so many different like levels to the other world. So they're also associated with Tir na n Og, which is like the land of youth.
Okay.
Like the fountain of youth is there.
Okay.
And time passes so quickly on Earth, but not as quickly in Tir na n Og. So if you were to go to Tir na n Og, and it would feel like maybe 2 days passed, but literally like hundreds of years passed. So if you came back to Earth, you would die because you were too old to live here in this world. So in fairy time, things are very different.
I ran a roleplay game once that I designed, and if you went to the other worlds, there was no way to predict how fast or slow time was passing versus where you came from.
That's kind of cool.
Like, even if you went to the same place, the time may pass
differently.
Differently. And so you wouldn't know.
I feel like, on a scientific level, like, when you have, like, different kinds of universes and things like that, I mean, string theory says that other universes, parallel universes exist, and time is really an abstract construct that we created. It doesn't really exist.
Right.
So that's interesting. I mean, fast forward, you know, through the missionization of Ireland and everything, Christianity began to take hold. You know, mixing Christian religion with Irish spiritual and cultural beliefs, fairies were often characterized thereafter as demonic entities, fallen angels, or demoted pagan deities, i.e. the Tuatha De Danann. And to some mythologists, you know, fairies can be explained away as spirits of the dead, a race of humanoids that preceded modern man, which I guess you can also see in the origin story of the Tuatha De Danann preceding modern man. Or sometimes they're also thought of as elementals, so magic and magical entities who personify a particular force of nature and exert power over that particular force. So in this way, fairies have been described as spirits of the air, so they can manipulate air. So that is pretty much all I have on fae, and then I have more on changeling.
Okay, so I want to tell you a true story about something that happened in 1917. Excuse me. So this is the story about the Cottingley fairies.
The Cottingley?
Cottingley fairies.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
So Cottingley is a place in England near Bradford.
Okay.
Okay?
I don't know where that's at, but...
Neither do I, but some people might. So, in 1917, two young girls... Well, actually, one was a teenager and the other one was a younger girl. They were staying together. They're cousins, so they're staying in the one girl's mom, the other girl's aunt, there in that house. And they would spend their time playing out by... It's a British word for, like, a brook, basically.
Oh, okay.
So... And then the mom is like, you guys keep coming back muddy and dirty, and you have to stop playing out there. And they were like, but that's where the fairies are.
Oh.
Okay.
Mm.
So Frances Griffiths is the girl who actually lives in the at that property. She's 9. Mm-hmm. And then her cousin Elsie is 16.
Okay.
And so... Yeah, so Frances and her mom came to the UK from South Africa to stay with Elsie's mom at their house in Cottingley. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Elsie's mom is like, you can't play out there, you're getting all muddy. And they're like, no, because that's where the fairies are. So they take Elsie's dad's camera outside, okay? They produce two photos of... fairies.
Oh.
The first shows Frances sitting behind a bush with four fairies dancing in the foreground.
Interesting.
2 months later, they take a photo of Elsie holding her hand out to a gnome.
Huh.
Okay. So, their mom is like,
what the heck?
Okay. And Frances mails the first photo to a friend of hers in South Africa, because that's, you know, where she moved from.
Mm-hmm.
So basically she sends a letter and she's like, this is what I'm learning and this is what I'm doing with my time. And oh, here's this photo of of fairies. And in that letter she writes, it's funny, I never used to see them in Africa. It must be too hot for them there.
Aww.
So in 1919, Elsie's mother began attending meetings of the
Theosophical Society?
Yeah, Theosophical Society. So it's basically a group brought out by, like, this the movement of spiritualism, which we covered in a previous episode.
Mm-hmm.
So the Theosophical Society believes in the evolution of humans toward perfection.
Huh.
So after a meeting about fairy life, she... takes the photos and shows them to this guy, Edward Gardner.
Mm-hmm.
And he believes that the photos are proof that humanity is entering the next cycle of evolution.
Huh.
So not because he thinks we're turning into fairies, but because he thought that being able to see them represented some new level.
Oh, like a level of, like, spiritual growth
right.
for people.
Okay. Yes. So Gardner then takes the photos to this man named Harold Smelling. Smelling. I have good handwriting, but I can't read it. So he takes these photos to this guy for authentication, and I think it's Snelling. So Snelling never says that the photos are of fairies. What he says is that there's no evidence of trickery or manipulation.
Oh.
So then...
Well, they didn't have Photoshop in 1917 or 1919.
Well, they approach the family about getting rights to the photos, and the family declines to be paid. And then they reproduce the photos so that they can make prints that can be displayed and sold by Gardner, basically on, like, a lecture circuit.
Mm-hmm.
So then Snelling and Gardner take these new negatives, and they go to Kodak, the photo company, and ask for them to examine them for authenticity. Kodak declines.
Weird.
So then they take it to another photograph company called Ilford. Ilford concludes that the photos are authentic.
Mm-hmm.
And so Gardner and Snelling are basically like, well, 2 out of 3 ain't bad. They must be real. So,
Hey, Meatloaf would agree.
Right.
2 out of 3 ain't bad.
So another thing, though, that happened during this time is that Sir Arthur Conan Doyle is like, this is it. This is the proof, this blah, 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 right? Because he's all in on all these spiritualism things.
Oh, yeah.
So
it was his bag.
Right. He's using them in articles that he's publishing in different publications. And this kind of continues. And eventually the girls take more photos.
Oh.
So in 1920, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle sends the Edward Gardner guy to go to Elsie Wright's house. And their dad tells Gardner, listen, I was really sure that they were fake, but we could never find any evidence. Like, huh. They couldn't find any, you know, like, pictures of fairies or anything like that. So Gardner believes the family, and he leaves a camera and more like photo plates, like it's kind of what you need to take a picture then, like, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like film.
Yeah.
So he leaves a camera and plates with the girls, and they end up taking new pictures after he leaves because I guess the weather was bad.
Mm-hmm.
So they take photos and they sent them by mail back. And the two photos that they sent, let me see, they're these two. So there's one of Frances with a fairy, like, right in her face. And then there's one with Elsie looking at a fairy in a bush. Okay. Another fairy in a bush.
We can post these on social.
Yes.
When we
yep.
do the episode.
So Gardner's like, or no, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's like, I'm so excited. We have more pictures. This is the coolest crap ever, right?
Yeah.
So they're published all over the place. And as they get more widespread, there are some experts that are like, this has got to be fake. But then there are other experts that are like, these have got to be real.
Right, yeah.
Right?
There's a division.
Right. So Edward Gardner visited the family in 1921, and he brought more cameras and plates for the girls, but he brings this clairvoyant with him. And the clairvoyant is like, I can see these fairies everywhere.
Wow.
Right? So they didn't take any more pictures. And the girls were like, we're kind of tired of fairies. We're not doing this anymore.
It's old news.
Yeah. So interest kind of wanes. And then in 1976, the photos get some more media attention and they become popular again. And some more modern investigations conclude that the photos are fake. And then in 1983, the girls admit that the photos are faked.
How did they fake them?
So they took illustrations of dancing girls from a children's book called The Princess Mary's Gift Book that was published in 1914 and drew wings on them. Then they used hat pins to support them in the bushes.
Okay.
And then...
Sneaky.
And then they set it up and took photos. And then they took these cardboards and stuff and, like, basically just threw them in the brook. And so, like, they dissolved. They
right?
were, like, washed right. away. Yeah.
Yeah.
But in the early 1980s, Frances is insistent that the fifth photo was not faked.
All right. Okay. Well, I mean,
she confesses that all four of the others were fake, but that this fifth one that's just a fairies, no people, was real.
I don't buy
but
it.
But Elsie's like, no, they're all fake.
Yeah.
Right? So, okay, so each of the girls claimed to have taken the fifth photograph. Like, Frances says she took it, but Elsie says that she took it. Mm. And what Frances says that's about, like, why it's real is that she concludes that they must be taking pictures of what they're imagining.
You can't, I mean, no, that's not how it works.
Right. So she's not saying that, like, they're fairies, but she's saying that it's somehow, like, a photo of what they're thinking about.
No.
Right.
Exactly. No. Scientifically cannot happen.
In 1985, Elsie said that the reason they didn't tell anybody that they were fakes was that they were embarrassed about fooling the author of Sherlock Holmes. So they didn't want to say anything. And then, obviously, because they were born so early, they both passed away. Frances passed away in 1986 and Elsie in 1988. And the photos and, like, the cameras that took them are on display at the National Science and Media Museum in Bradford.
That's kind of cool, though.
Yeah.
I mean, they're total fake, but I mean, it made an impact in history.
Yeah, it did, for sure.
Yeah.
And the photos, like, looking at them from a modern lens are so obviously fake.
Yeah.
But they really were, like, accepted to be real by a lot of people for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. I mean, that's interesting. I like it, though. But, I mean, at least I'm glad that they decided to say, hey, we fudged all this, so just kidding.
Right.
Yeah.
Also, I like that they were like, listen, we were embarrassed that we fooled the guy. But listen, a lot of people fooled Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Yeah.
He was, he really wanted to believe.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, let's do announcements.
Okay.
And then we'll talk about changelings.
Sounds good.
Okay. Okay, so we have a new patron.
We do have a new patron.
So I wanted to thank Cassie B with all of the love that our cold black hearts can give.
Yes.
Cassie has pledged at the Booze and Ghouls Club level.
Yeah.
So she will be part of the Booze and Ghouls Club. She will get a membership card that entitles her to a merch discount.
Heck yeah, Cassie, thank you.
Which leads me into announcement number two. We're going to have merch available for sale to patrons at this point. So Andy and I are preparing for some like marketing events that we're planning on going to.
Mm-hmm.
And we have been designing some merch. And as it comes in, we're going to make it available for online sale to patrons only at this time. Once some of the events are over and we know... you know, how much...
what we have in inventory.
Yeah, what we have still in inventory. The sales may open up to all fans, but for right now, they will be available to patrons only. So that Booze and Ghouls Club membership will... membership discount will apply.
Yes.
But anybody who is a patron will be able to buy merch through Patreon. We're going to be at Creepy Con Cleveland.
June 6th.
June 6th. Which seems far away, but it's not.
It will sneak up.
Yeah. So this is a convention that is it taking place at House of Wills? Or is it taking place to benefit House of Wills?
I think it's to benefit House of Wills.
To benefit House of Wills.
That's who's throwing it, is the owner or the coordinator of House of Wills and Octobers.
Okay.
And Cleveland Paranormal Society.
Do you know where it is going to be?
I can't remember, but I can look it up really quick.
Okay, look it up real quick.
Okay.
So, as always, we're going to thank Necropodicon for being our home on the internet. Thanks, as always, to our local library. Follow us on social media at Shivers Podcast. Shiverspodcast at Gmail is our email. We love to hear from you, whether you have a creepy story to tell us, a show idea, or you just want to chat. You can always reach out to us. We will get back to you. It's always Shivers with two V's, S-H-I-V-V-E-R-S. She really set up an event with no location.
Yeah, it just says Cleveland, Ohio. So.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll have the location soon, but you might want to mark that on your calendar if you're in the area, because you get to meet us.
Yeah.
We'll be there with some Shivers merch, but also some just generally creepy materials.
Things.
So.
Our creepy selves.
Yeah. And it's sure to be a spooky day.
Yeah.
Okay. That's it for announcements.
Sounds good.
All right. Let's get back to it.
Okay. So, changelings.
Mm-hmm.
A kind of fairy.
Like a pixie.
Yes, like a pixie or like a troll or a gnome, any of those guys.
Cool.
So a changeling is defined as a human-like creature commonly found in folklore and folk religion throughout Europe. Very, very common in, of course, Celtic mythology and lore. So a changeling was believed to be a fairy child that had been left in the place of a human child, which was stolen by fairies. So the fairies come in, take the human child, leave a fairy in its place.
What do they want the human child for?
Oh, I'll get there.
Okay.
Yes, I will get there.
Because that's the thing I've been like, but why?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll get there. Sometimes adults were also affected, though not as often as children.
So, like, swapped?
Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Stolen. Yeah. Mm-hmm. While many European cultures have beliefs and tales of changelings, again, I just want to focus specifically on those of Irish and Celtic culture, since they have the deep-rooted belief in, mm-hmm. in fairies.
Okay.
But because a lot of European culture does believe in them, I mean, a lot of medieval European literature contains stories of changelings, so you'll see it a lot in mm-hmm. a lot of things, and especially even in, like, medieval or older kind of artsy-fartsy mm-hmm. drawings and whatnot.
Well, for a while, they used it as an explanation for things that they just didn't have any other way to explain.
Exactly. I'll get there, too.
Okay.
Yeah. So, regarding the swapping of children for a changeling, there's a common theme threaded within all of these type of tales, that it's a way to explain a child that is or has become afflicted with unexplained diseases,
mm-hmm.
Some kind of disorder that they didn't understand, or developmental disabilities. So I think using the story of a changeling is a way for parents to kind of be in denial as well. Like, mm-hmm. oh, that's not my baby. It's deformed. A changeling must have taken my baby and left this in
right.
his or her place.
And especially in, like, autism spectrum disorders, yep. where children seem to be developing appropriately until yeah. they reach a certain point in their young toddlerhood.
Yes.
Where they start to either slow down their development or regress.
Yep.
It can be used as an explanation because that really seems unexplainable.
Yeah. They didn't understand what was happening, especially in that situation where the child was developing normally and then just something happens, and so they're like, what happened to my child? Like, what
right.
happened? I don't understand. So they think that someone came in, took their child, and left another one in its place because of that sharp, drastic behavioral mm-hmm. change. To name a few other disorders that, you know, were part of the changeling lore, we have spina bifida, cystic fibrosis, Down syndrome, of course, autism spectrum disorder, and cerebral palsy, or even sudden failure to thrive, where, you know, your kid might just end up just all of a sudden go into, like, a respiratory failure,
mm-hmm.
or even SIDS.
Yeah.
They didn't know scientifically or medically back then what those things were.
Right.
So they're just like, oh, well, fairy took my baby and put this lame one in its place.
Yeah.
So basically, the changeling legend has been used to explain away the peculiarities of children who did not or were not developing normally. So why would a fairy take a human child? Well, there's a few reasons. And these are all, of course, conjecture or mm-hmm. what people have always speculated. The first is for the human child to act as a servant to
okay.
the fairies. Or just simply maybe because the fairy, if it was a benevolent fairy, wanted to love a human child or feel the love of a human child.
Okay.
If it wasn't a benevolent spirit or fairy, maybe it was out of malice. This is just what they do because they're inherently evil. In rare cases, sometimes an elderly fairy would be exchanged for a human child so that the old fairy could live the rest of their life in comfort being coddled by human parents.
Okay.
Like, if the old fairy
was... I
don't
know why that's so funny.
Like, yeah, the old fairy's, like, on his way out. And they're like, I just want to be coddled and swaddled until I die. Yeah.
That's just so funny to me. An old fairy,
yeah. There was also a belief that fairies actually needed human milk or food in order to survive. So it was thought to be a survival instinct or survival method for a fairy to swap out a human child so that they would get the nourishment they need.
Ah.
Yeah.
So the fairy baby, the changeling baby,
yes.
would nurse and
yep.
then get that
mm-hmm.
that glorious antibody
yes.
full
yes.
mother's milk.
Exactly.
All right. I see you, fairies.
Yeah, smarty pantses. There were some precautions that you could take to protect yourself or your children from changeling swaps. One of the most common ways was having iron nearby or somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So for some reason, iron is like kryptonite to the fairies. They're extremely off-put by iron or allergic to it in some way. They're just really susceptible to iron. So this seems safe. A lot of what parents would do is take iron scissors and put them in the child's, like, bassinet or crib or cradle.
Like, under the mattress or just in general?
In there with them. Like, they're sleeping and there's scissors literally right there. So
okay.
they could injure themselves. Like, what kind of logic is that? I don't understand. But that's something that they would do. Also, I guess wearing your clothing inside out was also a charm against
fairies. That's how you can get a snow day, too.
Yeah, exactly. So the parents and or the child would have inside out clothing. Okay. Also, this is a very Christian element. Baptizing your baby ASAP would save them from changelings cool. and fairy attacks. Of course. Because fairies are the devil.
Right. As opposed to the devil being the devil.
Right, yeah. They were, part of when Christianity came took hold, they were seen as, like, agents of the devil or mm-hmm. whatever. So that's why they're also associated with witchcraft and stuff. but how to drive out a changeling to return a child or a person they took. So trying to force the changeling to return the person that was taken.
Okay.
Some of these are gruesome.
Okay.
So you could hold the child or the person over a fire.
Okay.
Essentially burn out the changeling.
Okay.
That would result in death. Hold the child or the person underwater. That would result in death because of drowning.
Yeah.
In fact, there's a tale from Ireland. Oh, I can't remember. I want to say it was like 1821, 1823, where a woman, she ended up drowning her 4-year-old child in a river. She bathed him 3 times in the river to drive out the changeling, and in the 3rd time she held him under too long and he drowned. Yeah, he was 4 years old. Another thing that you could do is trick the changeling into revealing its true age by doing weird things, like brewing, seriously, weird things, by brewing beer in an eggshell or cooking a fully feathered chicken, because these things would make the changeling naturally.
I feel like I'm 112.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it.
I want some of that beer in that eggshell, man. I'm old enough. I'm 112.
Yeah, because... naturally, the changeling would say, I'm as old as the hills and I've never seen anything quite like that. Yeah.
I see.
Yeah. The other thing that you could do...
Not another gruesome one, right?
It kind of is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It kind of is. So you could force the changeling to ingest tea made of foxglove.
Oh.
Yeah. Which is... is toxic in large quantities because it has naturally occurring poisons that affect the heart.
Yeah.
So if children or people were made to drink that, they would likely die.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so here's the thing. So people, the phenomenon of people saying, this is an imposter, it's my child or my loved one has been replaced, was actually found in a medical case to be like a medical disorder.
Yeah,
that's the Capgras delusion.
Yeah.
So it was 1923. The Capgras delusion was diagnosed by, what's his name? Joseph Capgras, a French psychiatrist. And it's described as a psychiatric disorder where a person holds the belief, aka a delusion, that a friend, spouse, parent, or other loved one, or even a pet, was replaced by an identical imposter.
Okay.
So that was 1923 when it was first diagnosed in an actual case. Most commonly, the Capgras delusion occurs in people diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia,
uh-huh.
but has also been seen in cases where there is some kind of brain injury,
okay.
Dementia, and has even been associated comorbidly with diabetes, hypothyroidism, and migraine attacks.
That diabetes one is the one that's the most interesting to me because diabetes typically doesn't have very many like psychological manifestations, mm-hmm. whereas the others are a little bit more understanding.
Definitely.
They're more, anyways.
Yeah. Migraine attacks makes me nervous because I live with chronic migraines, so I hope someday I don't.
Actually, I brought something I was going to give you after we were done recording, but... because I also have migraines.
Yeah.
I used to get my migraine treatment through an organization called Cove. It's like an
online... Oh, I've heard of them. Yeah,
It's an online-based treatment resource. You mm-hmm. basically have like an online provider that talks to you about your medicine, sends you prescriptions mm-hmm. and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I got an email from them today that they are now providing this... innovative migraine treatment called Nerivio. It's a device that you wear on your arm, And it's like a neuro disruptor. It's supposed to help with migraines. So I brought you the email printed out so you can look into that for your migraines.
Thank you. Is that like a nicotine patch or is it an implant?
Oh, it's neither.
Oh.
It's not medicine.
What?
It's a device. And when you get an Aura.
Like electric?
I think it has some...
Like pulses?
It's not pulses, though.
I should just read it.
So it seems like as soon as you have an indication you're getting a migraine, you put it on.
Wow.
Just like at the same time as you would take like a Triptan.
Yeah.
So you put it on, and however it works, it disrupts like the neuro impulses or whatever. And apparently it did really well in clinical trials.
Yeah,
and it's FDA approved.
That's amazing. So, a smartphone-controlled wearable device. Wow.
Yeah, so I know you haven't had success with some other treatments, and I thought that you might want to look into that.
Thank you. Yeah, I actually just had a migraine Saturday night, so thanks. I definitely will. I appreciate you thinking of me. Thank you.
You're welcome. I got the email, and I was like, I don't need that because I'm all set with my migraine treatment. Yeah. Thank the heavens.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Just one more little quick anecdote on changelings. So I want to talk about this case from 1895.
Cool.
So 28 years, just a simple 28 years before Capgras delusion was like diagnosed as a medical disorder.
What? Did they have any cases of that Capgras delusion like by itself, or is it like a delusion that occurs in delusional disorders?
Yeah, I don't think it exists by itself. There's always some kind of medical comorbidity.
So it's like a classification of delusion.
Yes, yes.
When you already have a disorder that can cause delusions.
Yes. Okay. Exactly. That's it.
Okay.
Yeah. But this was interesting to me because, of course, it comes from Ireland. So it's the case of Bridget and Michael Cleary.
Okay.
So long story short, because it's a pretty lengthy story, and I'm going to chop it up for time. But Michael Cleary became convinced, so convinced, that his wife, Bridget Cleary, had been taken by fairies and that a changeling was left in her place after she came down with some kind of illness.
Mm-hmm.
So she started, she had a fever, and she was behaving erratically, and she was coughing and all of these things, and she just kind of was not herself.
Mm-hmm.
We know today that what she was experiencing was likely an upper respiratory infection, probably pneumonia or bronchitis. But because of her symptoms and the way that she was behaving, Michael Cleary really thought that she was a grown woman who had been stolen by fairies and that a changeling took her place. And it was believed that once a changeling took someone to the fairy realm, that you only had a 9-day window to retrieve them or else they would be lost to the fairy realm forever.
Interesting.
Yeah. So just 1 week, 7 days after coming down with whatever illness she had, her fever and persistent cough, Michael Cleary was able to convince Bridget's father, a few of her cousins, and a few like townsfolk that she was a changeling.
Wow.
Yeah, 9 of them. In total, there were 9 people that were implicated in this case.
Wow.
That he convinced them that she was a changeling that needed saving from the fairy realm. But to drive the changeling out and bring back the real Bridget Cleary, guess what Michael did?
Did he poison her?
He set her on fire.
Okay.
So she burned alive.
Jesus.
Yep.
What year was this?
1895.
Man.
Yeah.
I love the like, cures for things that, like,
right.
It's going to kill you anyways. Because that's what they did, like, the witch trial that was based on, they did this all over the place, that was based on whether or not you sink or float.
Yeah.
So, essentially, if you sink, you're a human, but you drown and die because you sank in the water.
Yeah.
And if you float, you're a witch, and then they kill you.
Yeah, I know. It's ridiculous. Like, there's really no winning either way.
I mean, I'm sure that some things are better.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. So, yeah, on day 7 of her illness, Michael set her on fire, and there were 9 people that were there as witnesses, essentially.
Can you imagine staying there and watching your daughter burn?
Yeah, and her dad did start to have doubts, so the other people tried to intervene and put her out, but Michael, he basically held everyone else back from intervening to put out the flames because he was legit like, no, we're helping her, it's fine, don't worry about it, the changeling will drive out and then she'll be okay. She ended up dying. Michael was convicted of manslaughter. Most everyone else were convicted of wounding.
Okay.
And were sentenced to hard labor. Michael served 20 years in prison, and a couple others just served like 18 months or something like that. All involved, though, even though some did try to help her and intervene, like, afterwards, it was like groupthink, like, oh, this was what actually what it was. So all of them, after she passed and, you know, convictions were sentenced, they maintained that they were only trying to drive out the changeling and did not actually murder the real Bridget Cleary.
Jeez.
And so in terms of media, there is, if anyone is obviously a fan of podcasts, if you're familiar with the Lore podcast, Amazon did turn it into, like, there's a couple seasons where they have episodes that they've, like, reenacted. So this is actually one of them. So in season one, episode 3 of Lore, it's called, I believe it's Black Stockings.
Lore, the TV show?
Yes.
Okay.
On Amazon Prime. So yeah, if you want to watch it, it's on Amazon Prime right now. You can pull it up, season one, episode 3.
And it's included in your membership because it's a Prime original.
Yep, exactly.
Go ahead.
Then there are a couple other books about the whole case. So there's one called The Burning of Bridget Cleary by Angela Bourke. And then there is another book that's called The Cooper's Wife is Missing. And this is by dual authors, Joan Hoff and Marion Yates. I have not read either of these books, but I definitely will because this is a case that absolutely fascinates me. And while Bridget was never associated with witchcraft in life because she was burned, she's usually referred to as the last witch of Ireland, or the last burned witch of Ireland, because of the fairies. And it's only because of the fairies, not because she was ever accused of doing witchcraft. But there's actually like a chant that has become very popular in Irish culture. And it's, are you a witch or are you a fairy? Or are you Bridget Cleary?
Whoa.
Yeah. Or are you the wife of Michael Cleary? Are you the wife of Michael Cleary is the last line.
It looks like it correlates to episode 11 of the podcast, also called Black Stockings.
Yes.
So if you haven't listened to the podcast or watched the TV show or done a little of both, the TV show is based almost exactly on the podcast.
Yeah.
So if you have listened to the podcast, you may find that the TV show, while the animations and reenactments they do are really good, is stories you've already heard. So just saying that in case people are like, wait a minute, I already did this.
Yeah.
So they're basically the same. But if you like watching things instead of listening, I definitely think that the way that they did that show is more interesting than just watching someone record a podcast.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you see everything kind of play out. And Aaron Mankey, his storytelling, I absolutely love his podcast.
He's phenomenal. And he has more than one podcast now. So if you go to... he has like a website or something called like theworldoflore.com. Hey, Aaron, if you want to sponsor this episode, that'd be cool.
Yeah, we'd love that. Big fans, Aaron.
So you can go there and see the other things he does, because he has like the Cabinet of Curiosities and some other stuff. And I think that they, so he has books and things. He does a really great job. And he definitely was part of like the trio of creators that inspired me to do podcast.
He's a great one. But with this story, I mean, was it possibly a cultural belief gone wrong, or could it have been the campground illusion?
Could he have just wanted to kill his wife?
Right. Who knows? She actually, and Erin points out too, that her business had been taking off. She was essentially a tailor, and she started making dresses for like the townswomen, and she was delivering
Women in that time weren't allowed to be successful.
She actually was doing better than her husband.
Oh.
Yeah. So maybe that was it.
I don't know.
Yeah.
You want to talk about some other media?
Sure.
Cool. So... let's start with the thing I first thought of when we decided that we were doing this episode. So the first thing that I thought of when we talked about doing Changelings was the movie Changeling with Angelina Jolie.
I've never seen it.
So it's not a scary movie. It actually is a movie based on a true crime story about the disappearance of this young boy named Walter. So I don't want to give away like the whole story of it, even though it's like a true story that happened and you can read any number of articles about it. I do think it's worth watching. So basically, this woman's son goes missing, and the police kind of flub a bunch of stuff. But they end up bringing her son home, but she's like, that's not my kid.
Oh.
And so then, like, there's a whole movie worth of things that happen. And it is a very good story. But I want to be clear that it is a true crime story. It is not a scary story. It is not a thriller. It is a film based on a true story. It's not a documentary. It's a film, but it's not meant to be entertaining in the way that a lot of other things we talk about are meant to be entertaining. Yeah. So I rented this for about $4 on YouTube. You can get it on Hulu or on Amazon Prime if you have, like, Stars or Showtime, like the add-on or whatever. So, yeah, it's a very good movie, but it's not the type of movie we usually talk about. But it is the first thing I thought about when we decided to do this. So, it's a very good film, like 4 out of 5 stars. Very good film, just not what we usually talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Next thing is I'm going to talk about another movie. This movie was excellent. It's called The Hollow, H-A-L-L-O-W. It is an Irish film about a family that lives in the woods in Ireland, and it ends up there's a changeling involved in the story. So this couple and their baby, he looks like he's probably a year old, but you know how fictional babies are. So they're British, they live in this house in Ireland in the woods, and their neighbor, creepy neighbor guy, is like, you need to leave. And they take the iron bars off their windows, and then all hell breaks loose.
Huh.
It's very good. So
it looks like there's scary faces.
So
gonna give me nightmares.
The people of the Hollow, which actually I think they just refer to the fae folk in this movie as the Hollow. Like, it's like this general, like, concept is that, like, the Hollow is the fae folk.
Huh.
And there are some elements to it that are a little bit outside of just, like fairies and, like, specific beings. It's very scary and very well told. If you watch it all the way through the credits for the post-credit scene, which, I mean, the movie's fine without the post-credit scene. I just thought the post-credit scene was good. But yeah, like 3.5 out of 5 stars. Good, scary movie.
71% Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, very good. I had never heard of it until I started looking into stuff for this episode.
Yeah.
And it's definitely good. So if you haven't heard of it, check it out. I'm pretty sure I watched this on Hulu with subscription, but it's also available on YouTube for $4.
Mm-hmm.
So, very good. I had to watch it with closed captions on, not just because I watch everything with closed captions, but also because of the accents.
Yeah.
So, it was so good. But the best thing I consumed in preparation for this is a book. I read a novel called The Changeling by Victor Lovell.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I listened to the audiobook version. The audiobook is narrated by the author. What happened?
Something touched my foot.
Was it the ghost?
I'm like, yes! Oh, that was creepy. Oh, it literally felt like someone took a feather and was like,
ooh.
It's the recording studio ghost.
That's creepy.
Sorry, go ahead. Sorry.
Okay, so I do want to put a trigger warning on this book for postpartum depression / psychosis and other related elements that should be obvious if you've gotten this to this point.
Yeah.
So there's definitely some stuff that may be hard for some listeners to get through, but if you can deal with those types of elements, it's so good. So it's like a big book, and like in one hand you have this story about like parenthood and grief and all of these really heavy things, and then in the other hand you have this like weird magical world where things that aren't real are real.
Huh.
And it, the way that it's structured reminds me of the way that Hereditary is structured, where the beginning of the movie seems like just this, really well-told story about grief and how grief is terrifying, but then it turns into something else.
Mm-hmm.
But it was so good.
Aww.
So good. So definitely I recommend it. The audiobook was definitely, like, not cringy, easy to listen to. So yeah, good. Super good book.
Awesome.
And not crazy long. So that's it for media.
Awesome.
So do you want me to tell you a story?
Yeah.
All right, let me drink some water.
Om nom.
My mommy took me to dinner today.
At Bibibop.
At Bibibop.
Bibibop.
So I love Bibibop. It's so good. I don't think that they're, like, nationwide, so some people may be like, what?
What is that?
It's Asian Chipotle, and it's very good.
Yeah.
All right. So, I'm going to tell you a story today about a girl named Erica Johnson.
Okay. Erica Johnson. Got it.
Erica Johnson failed to arrive to school on Wednesday, May 8th, 2019. She sent a Snapchat to her friend Leah at 7:03 that showed her wearing a light pink top, her light brown hair in a high ponytail with a gray scrunchie. Ugh, bad hair day was the caption. Her mother said goodbye to her from the bathroom as she walked out the door around 7:05. Her mother received an automated call from the school that Erica was absent around 9:18 a.m. She immediately called the school, assuming that there was some mistake. The following week was a whirlwind of activity to find Erica. Search parties, police questioning, press conferences. With the boom of true crime obsession, everyone knows that these things do happen in small towns. Erica's neighbor was looking out her window and realized that she saw a ring of dark grass on the front lawn that she hadn't noticed before.
Mm-hmm.
And so she knew. So she knew that those circles are called fairy rings. And a fairy ring is said to be a place where either the grass grows differently or only mushrooms or only a certain type of flower will grow because fairies dance there in circles. And, like, it wears out the natural flora and something else will grow for a while. So that's nothing, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
Except that in their hometown, they had a lot of legends about fairy circles, that you couldn't walk through a fairy circle without becoming cursed, that anyone who entered a fairy circle, even on accident, would die at a young age.
Mm.
So, not that she thought that it was really worth looking into, but the neighbor girl, like, Googles, like, fairy circles and missing people, and she finds that you can become trapped in a fairy circle. So she reads up on this and finds that the fairies can imprison people that enter the fairy circles and make those people invisible to the outside world, which makes sense because when the police brought in their scent hounds to find Erica's trail, they only got, like, halfway through the yard before the dog started walking in circles. So she looks into it a little bit more to see how you can get somebody out. And she finds that there are a couple ways that you can enter a fairy circle and be protected. One of which is that you can walk around the fairy circle 9 times and then you can enter unharmed. Or you can bring iron with you. So she goes downstairs by this fireplace. I almost said cemetery.
Yeah.
How creepy would it be if you lived in a house with a cemetery?
So creepy.
So she goes downstairs by the fireplace and grabs, like, a poker from the fireplace, and she goes outside, walks around the fairy circle 9 times, steps inside, and sure enough, Erica is in there. But Erica is in there and she's dancing. But it's been, like, 8 days now, right? So she's looks like she's starving. She's dirty. She's tired. Her hair is a mess. And she's not responding to her neighbor calling her name. She's in some sort of trance, right? So the girl takes this poker and reaches out and touches her with it, and it seems to snap her out of this trance. But she becomes so exhausted that she collapses, and the neighbor girl has to carry her out of the circle. Wow. So that's a weird thing to find somebody in their own yard, right? Mm-hmm. So the police start to question the neighbor, and this explanation that she just finds her in the yard is ridiculous, right? So they tell her to show them, right? Show us where you went. And she's like, well, it's here, it's this dark circle. And they're like, this doesn't make any sense. And they force her to walk into the circle, expecting, you know, if this is true, then you'll just disappear, right? Well, she doesn't. She just walks into the circle. And she walks out the other side. So Erica's in the hospital getting evaluated for what's going on. And she's becoming progressively less mentally stable. So Erica ends up being hospitalized for psychosis. And they can't figure out, like, what happened to her based on, you know, like, things that people can do to other things. They can't figure out what has driven her so mad in 8 days. And it was just this neighbor girl that had her kidnapped or whatever. So she's hospitalized and she's talking all kinds of nonsense about these, like, demons and goblins. And she's emaciated, refusing to eat. She's, like, totally out of her mind. And then the neighbor girl gets charges pressed for kidnapping Erica, even though she didn't. And she ends up getting tried. There's no good evidence either way. So she's convicted. And when she's in jail, she starts to lose her mind. And so to this day, they're both in their own prisons, entirely insane from the fairies in the circle.
Creepy. That would be the worst, to be in your own prison in your head.
Yep.
Yeah. From the fairies. Fairies make people go crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like actually like one of the main thoughts about fairy circles is that if you go in, they can force you to dance until you go insane.
Yep.
Die. Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah. And from what I know about fairy circles, if you going around the circle 9 times is the magic number. If you do it 10 times, that would undo everything.
Right.
And if you went in after 10 times, you would get stuck.
Right. Yeah. Because that's really just one time.
Yeah.
Because you went 9 and then you started over.
You redid everything. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining me, Andy.
You're welcome. Thanks for letting me.
I have an idea for the next episode.
Okay. What's that?
So, continuing on with this kind of trend we have for things that are kind of fantastical, but hopefully trending to something that can be a little bit more terrifying.
Spooky.
I think we should talk about imaginary friends.
Okay.
So, we'll be back.
Sounds good.
All right. We'll see y'all then.
Okay.
Bye. Bye.
Hey, I'm Brad, and if you like D&D, and fantasy stories with lots of magic, adventure, strange beasts, and oddball characters, and comedians with New Zealand accents, then oh boy, have I got just the show for you. The Fate of Isen is a podcast that has, wait for it, all of those things. Remember those things I mentioned? It's got all of them! Now go listen to The Fate of Isen because it's good, and you deserve good things. Fate of Isen. A proud member of the Necropodicon Network.
Necropodicon. Hard to pronounce? Easy to listen.